All right, Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestseller. He sold over 5 million books and has been all over the place. But here's the point. He's coming up next. He's got a brand new book out about, it's called The Kremlin Conspiracy. It's all about, really, Vladimir Putin. And just an amazing book. He also is an expert on Islam, radical Islam, and what it's doing in the world. So do not miss him next on The Chris Kroc Show, only on News Talk 820 AM WBAP. We are doing a program before the program even begins. Welcome to a really, really fun hour with Joel C. Rosenberg. Now, for those who don't, I mean, I would say 90% of my listeners know or have heard of him. Some don't, and I want to give you the bona fides. I'll just say what I told Joel a minute ago. My old church, when one of his books got into the library like 10 year, or 8 years ago, they're like, oh, dude, it's Joel Rosenberg. Oh, my gosh, you got to read his book. Oh, my gosh. It was on Islam and tying in, correct me if I'm wrong, Joel, but with biblical prophecy.
Yeah.
And since then, there's been a whole bunch more New York Times bestsellers that you have. You were on Fox the other day, and one of the hosts, I can't recall which one it was, but she's one of the primetime ones. She says, my husband's going to kill me because we're going on vacation in a few days. And he says, the first 3 days, he's not going to see me because I'm reading your book.
Right. I'm not trying to be a homewrecker here. I'm just, you know, go on vacation. You should probably just, you know, Shannon Bremen, you know, she and her husband are lovely. I mean, Sheldon is an awesome guy. And I'm like, just go on vacation. But this is what she wants, is to read that novel. So,
you know, I love, and I'm not saying
in Texas, you're odd to say bless her heart.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
But it
yes.
can be positive or negative. In this case, I mean it positively.
Predominantly negative.
I'm a northerner. So, yeah. All right. In this case,
where are you from originally?
Rochester, New York.
I know you went to Syracuse.
I went to Syracuse University.
Awesome. I'm a Yankee originally from Chicago, which that's, don't hold that against me, please. I got here as fast.
I won't. Your audience might. I mean, you know,
trust me.
They know you.
Rush just the other day said this. By the way, new book recommendation if you're looking for something great to read, spy thriller novel stuff. It's Joel Rosenberg's The Kremlin Conspiracy. It's about real world events, real life people, Vladimir Putin, a major figure in this. And the way to think about Putin is as Michael Corleone in The Godfather's, not rash, not hot headed, not a street thug, but a cold blooded, calculated killer. It's a superb novel. It's an edge of the chair, arms tensed up as you read this thing. And it just came out and it's awesome, called The Kremlin Conspiracy. Joel Rosenberg, our old buddy here. So that's what Rush thinks about your book. You have addressed audiences at the White House, Pentagon, U.S. Capitol, Canadian Parliament, European Union Parliament. You've met with Vice President Pence. You're actually friends with Vice President Pence. If he allows you to say that publicly, he may not want you.
No, he
might be embarrassed of association.
We've been friends for years since he and his wife, Karen, were in the House of, when he was in the House of Representatives, and they were reading my novels. I didn't know them. I admired them, but he invited me to come for lunch, and I had lunch with the couple, and that began a friendship, which went all the way through the governor's mansion. They used to have me out to stay at the governor's mansion and get the new book. And now I just saw the vice president at National Religious Broadcasters Convention out in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And it was a private luncheon there. And he didn't know I was going to be there. So he comes over, he realizes it, he gives me a hug, and he goes, where's the copy of the new book?
Yes!
And I had actually sent him one through a friend.
But he never got it yet because he's the vice president.
The friend stole it and they're reading it. So we've sent it to a different friend that was more trustworthy, I guess.
There you go. This is why.
But that's kind of cool that, you know, the vice president of the United States would be reading this novel, you know.
This is why I like Joel Rosenberg as a person, because you're fun, you're real, beyond the successful author stuff. And that's important to me, having some fun.
Well, it's part of that comes from being Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that comes from being a failed political consultant.
So
when you lose for a decade, you think, maybe I shouldn't take myself too seriously.
I like that. Now, folks can get your book, The Kremlin Conspiracy, everywhere. Also, they need to check out joelcrosenberg.com.
You don't have to put the C in there. Just joelrosenberg.com.
Sorry. Look at me.
You might find somebody else.
Exactly. Who knows what? joelrosenberg.com. Okay, Rex Tillerson, good or bad decision today, and why?
Excellent decision.
Really?
Tillerson's a good man, but I think he was a good man in the wrong job, right? And first of all, being the CEO of a huge company, the world's largest, probably ExxonMobil, does not necessarily prepare you for the unique role of being a Secretary of State.
Right.
And one of the main job descriptions of being the Secretary of State is not just, you know, foreign experience. He had that. Not just negotiating experience. He had that. But you have to have the ear and the confidence of the president of the United States. Because when you're traveling around meeting with world leaders, they have to believe,
right,
and it has to be true, that you know exactly what the president thinks, and you are his spokesman. You're his diplomatic communicator. And it was clear from the beginning that Rex Tillerson did not have the ear or the confidence of the president. And often he would say things that a few hours were directly contradicted. It's not because he's an idiot. He's not. He's a smart man and he's an accomplished man. And therefore, I think he was not treated well in his exit. It's just not the way you do things. But that being said, it was clear he didn't have this trust relationship. Mike Pompeo has it. Mike Pompeo, as the CIA director, has been briefing the president of the United States every morning, with just a few exceptions, on the hottest intelligence issues of the day. And that's not usually the job of the CIA director. It's usually a staffer that comes and gives what's called the Presidential Daily Brief, the PDB.
Yeah.
It's not the CIA director that usually does it. But Trump likes Pompeo. He trusts Pompeo. Mm-hmm. Pompeo graduated first in his class at West Point. He was an army officer in Europe. He's a Harvard grad. I mean, and there's something about his personality that just works with the president. So the president said, I don't want a staffer. I want the top guy. I want Pompeo. Right. And there's no better or more important audience that the CIA director has had for the last 14 months than educating a new president,
right,
who doesn't have this experience,
right,
but has the job,
right,
and needs to get up to speed and needs to be able to ask any question on any topic related to foreign national security. And Pompeo has aced it and built a level of trust. And I guarantee you, when he's the Secretary of State, everybody in the world will know he knows what Trump is thinking, and he will not be contradicted on Twitter in 90 minutes. It's just not going
to
happen.
Does that speak to the president kind of messing up on his appointments, or is it more just like, hey, he's a business guy, it's his first time in office?
It's a learning curve. The guy, President Trump is one of the most successful business leaders in the world.
Right.
I mean, he didn't lose $900 million, or billion. Billion here, billion there. I think it was million, but he gained it all back. And Rex Tillerson's one of the leading business figures in the world. In theory, it would have worked. It could have worked. Mm-hmm. It just didn't. And
but why not try it? And if it would have worked, great.
Yeah, I think what we're watching, what the press is calling chaos, is a little chaotic and is a little exhausting. But it's also the president's way of finding the people that get him and can teach him, but also can explain him. That's not an easy thing to do for anybody, but he's finding the right people. And the guys the men and women that have come in that might have seemed on paper to be good, but they weren't that good, they basically have imploded and they leave. He doesn't waste time. He's not saying, I picked the Secretary of State. 4 years from now, I'll pick another one. No, there's no time for that.
Obama did that. He would defend him and go way too long, like a year, I think. 6 months, a year. It's like, dude, you should have done this 6 months ago.
Well, I think people we thought were terrible, he thought were wonderful. So I'm not sure that's – I don't think he was, hesitant to kick him out. I just think he thought they were great. Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, what a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
She still thinks that it's – because women were voting because their husbands were forcing them to. But I think it was different.
Yeah, I think she was horrible. Yeah, what an insult to women. Yeah, exactly. Hell, you're figuring it out. Look, I don't usually play sound effects when we've got our – but let me give you a little rim shot on that one. I'm a little late, of course, but where is – I can't even find – there. Right,
bless her heart.
Hold on. There you go.
Three-pointer.
Exactly. So – I want, for folks just joining us, Joel C. Rosenberg, author, New York Times bestseller, new one out called The Kremlin Conspiracy. I am blessed to have the novel right here, which I'm going to ask you to sign for me a little bit.
By the way, can I just give you a Vice President Pence anecdote?
Yes.
Because it's related to the book. So a couple months ago, he invited me to come over to the West Wing to his office. And my wife and I went, and I asked if I could bring my 13-year-old because he was turning 13 and he'd never been to the White House.
Yeah.
Meet a vice president of the United States. That was pretty cool. Well, we did all the pleasantries. We sat down. We talked issues for a while. So he said, by the way, as we're finishing up, what's your next book? I can't wait to read it. It wasn't done yet.
Okay.
I said, well, Mr. Vice President, because I don't call him Mike anymore.
Right.
I'm a little hesitant to say the title. He says, why? I said, well, it just, I think, let's, I'm writing a novel. It's, I'll get it to you when it's out. He goes, why? What's, come on, what's the title? I said, look, it doesn't have anything to do with the allegations swirling around this building,
right,
the White House.
Right.
Goes, what is the title?
That's
I said,
funny, yeah.
It's called The Kremlin Conspiracy.
I've never. You must have dropped this.
In the West Wing, we're 19 steps away from the Oval Office.
Love it.
And I've never seen Mike Pence laugh.
That's awesome. We're going to come right back. We have real fortunate here to have author Joel C. Rosenberg on from 8:30 to 9:30. If somebody has a question, can they call in, or is that something you, I don't know, you open
if
it?
You got, yeah, I can't. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'll get some headphones on there. Yeah, we'll do that as the hour progresses, 800-288-WBAP. But up next, I want to get more into North Korea. And then, of course, into Russia as well. Joel Rosenberg, his new book, The Kremlin Conspiracy. Check him out online at joelrosenberg.com. It's the Chris Kroc Show on WBAP. As I always say, there's a show between the show, and I wish you could hear it, but I'm sorry. It's Chris Kroc Show. Joel Rosenberg, Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestseller, is visiting with me until 9:30 tonight. Unless he runs out of here because he gets sick of me, but I'm having a wonderful time talking
to
him.
Thank you, I am as well.
I want folks to check out his book. I want you to check out his book, The Kremlin Conspiracy. You can get it virtually anywhere, and it's just an amazing book. And I'm grateful I have a copy because I'll blitz through it in a weekend. But I want to talk to you about. I mean, there's a bunch of things we're going to talk about, but North Korea. Tell me, with regards to North Korea, how bad is it there? Because I've heard that, you know, generation after generation is born in prison camps. The grandparents are so starving that grandparents literally are eating their kids, not all of them, but some of them. They're boiling bark to eat something with sustenance that when the curtain gets pulled back, it's going to be worse than we even could ever imagine. How bad do you think it is there from what you know?
I think you summed it up well. I was in South Korea 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I went up to the DMZ, I was taken by a South Korean military official who was trying to briefing me on the threat and what was happening there. He talked about starvation. He talked about torture camps. He talked about just unimaginable conditions. And then he took me, and I had one of my sons with me. I have four sons. He took us into one of the tunnels that the North Koreans had dug secretly under the DMZ so that they could surge tens of thousands of soldiers and weapons into South Korea for a raid. But a farmer had heard stuff that didn't make sense, you know, metal clinking and all kinds of rumbling, and alerted authorities, and they were able to figure it out and stop it. But we got to go down in it, and you go right under. And you arrive at the 38th parallel. Up above you is the border, and then of course there's a gate, a steel gate, and you can't go any further because that is North Korea.
Right.
Like on the where you are, North Korea. Where I am, South Korea. So that was fascinating because again, as a novelist, it opens up opportunities. You get invited to go do things, meet people that give you insights into some of the most dangerous and evil places on the planet, and. I also have an adopted sister from South Korea, so that has given us over my lifetime sort of a window into the benefits she had just because she was born on the southern side of that divide. But if she'd been born in the north, they would have aborted her or killed her. And people are dying. I mean, there was this North Korean elite soldier that jumped over the fence and scrambles, you know, and they're shooting at him and everything. Well, when they did a medical exam on him, they found corn kernels in his digestive tract. Why? Because there's no other food. And he was an elite soldier.
If you can't feed your soldiers, there's nothing.
And the best of the best, the guy's right on the border.
Wasn't he infested with worms?
And these worms and all kinds of
You can't afford
things.
A pill, not even like a dog pill to chew on? You give them something that'll kill the worms?
So look at what President Trump is doing very successfully right now. He's changed from the squishy appeasement Obama era strategic patience. They can mock us and, you know, run over us and we will never do anything. We'll just be very patient. And they've abandoned that strategy. And they've and President Trump has said, we're going to do maximum pressure. From the public side, tweeting Kim Jong-un as the as Rocket Man.
I love
flying
that.
Nuclear-armed aircraft, U.S. Yes. aircraft, over the peninsula.
Yes.
Surging naval forces, working with our allies, building up missile defenses. They're putting, and of course, ratcheting up sanctions.
Right.
President Trump, to his credit, he's a novice in foreign policy.
Right.
But he is putting pressure on North Korea unlike any other time in recent American history. And he's got Kim Jong-un to blink. Now, it's possible that they'll have some, the North will have some strategy to get us to blink, but right now, the pressure is creating something. Now, contrast that with the fact that the president doesn't have that strategy towards Vladimir Putin.
We're going to get in that big time, because I know there's some really telling things you have to say about that. Has Kim Jong-un or his father or any predecessor in North Korea ever blinked before that you can think of in recent history?
In 1993-94, it looked like they were blinking. They wanted negotiations with President Clinton.
That was Madeleine Albright then, with the whole tea
exactly.
thing, right? I'll reach for tea.
And then they were able to persuade the Clinton administration to blink, and we ended up giving them hundreds of millions of dollars, all kinds of food, oil. It was just crazy. And then to sign a piece of paper that says they won't build nuclear weapons, and now they have nuclear weapons. So the Clinton team got you know,
taken for a ride.
Got taken.
Mm-hmm.
And so that looked like a blink. And so we don't know if this is a blink yet, but I suspect it is. But okay. How it's played will take a Pompeo at State rather than Tillerson, because you need somebody who knows what he's doing in a very specific way.
Rachel Maddow on MSNBC was going nuts saying, no president has ever wanted to meet with them. Do you understand why? You know, so why would he, like, it's like, excuse me, ma'am. But the definition of insanity supposedly is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Right.
So I think it speaks to his ability to do something different with the Rocket Man, all this kind of stuff. I love because I one of the things I've said is, do you not understand what it's like to be Kim Jong-un, who is literally, and you correct me, he's a god with a small g. He is worshipped.
They treat him like a capital G.
And they worship, yes. Okay. So what is it like for him to have the most powerful man in the world say, you're Rocket Man, you know, all this kind of, you're fat, lazy, whatever you call it. So, I mean, I think it actually hurts him like none other, because he's like a god except for this. You know what I mean?
And the fire and fury comment.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
When the president said, look, you mess with us.
Yes.
We will melt you down.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people, you know, were freaked out. Why is the president doing this? They're not understanding that it's North Korea that's the evil force here that has had a free reign for a long time. And now, at least 8 years, they've been able to say whatever they want, do whatever they want, and nobody has shown steel. And Trump is showing steel.
Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestseller, sold over 5 million books. Rush is saying how awesome his book is, Vice President Pence. It's The Kremlin Conspiracy, available everywhere right now. Also, just go to joelrosenberg.com and check it out. Coming up next, Russia, which is what this book's all about. We're going to get into so much, the mistakes of the Obama administration, Susan Rice telling them to stand down, and why is Trump mysteriously silent or quiet on this? Joel Rosenberg tells us all about his thoughts on that next on the Chris Kroc Show on WBAP. Well, I'm having a great time talking to Joel C. Rosenberg. Never did I think I'd be sitting across from him and having a great conversation with him, but here we are on the Chris Kroc Show on News Talk 820 AM WBAP. His new book is The Kremlin Conspiracy, and he is a New York Times bestseller, sold over 5 million books, and you name it, he's done it, and so it's really an honor. You know, I wanted to ask you one thing before we get into Russia, which is huge and what this book is about, and I want people to get it, The Kremlin Conspiracy, and go to joelrosenberg.com. You might not like James Michener.
I haven't read much of him.
Okay.
My wife has.
I never read anything. My mom bought me the Poland book, probably because I'm Polish, and it kind of makes me think about some of what you talked about, where you were on the DMZ, you were in a tunnel underneath the North Korea, South Korean border. Michener writes about being, you know, years of going to Poland and being driven around and meeting all sorts of people that can teach him stuff. So that's one of the things that you do in your books, correct me if I'm wrong, which is that not only do you research, and do you are you up to all the facts and everything going on currently and what the future may behold, but also you go to these places, you study them. Is that not?
I do. And part of that is proactive on my part, because I've been blessed with seeing these books do well, and that has opened up doors, you know, to be able to just call somebody, an office of somebody, and say, hey, listen, I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I'm doing research on such and such. I'd love to come and meet your boss and just chat with him. And it's amazing how many people will say yes. But sometimes it's reversed, and they come to me. The former CIA director under George W. Bush was Porter Goss.
Yes.
And when he retired from the agency, I get a phone call through a friend of mine who says, Porter Goss has been reading your books for years, and now he'd like to meet you. I'm like, how come he didn't invite me to the agency and give me a mug or something, a T-shirt? I don't know, some secret code. I don't know. I wanted something. Anyway, that became a great friendship. And then two years ago, the King of Jordan,
yes,
King Abdullah,
yes,
read one of my thrillers called The First Hostage. It was the second in a trilogy. Well, it happens to be a series of books where he's an actual character in the books.
Cool.
And ISIS has captured chemical weapons in Syria, and they're planning a series of genocidal attacks against the United States, Israel, Jordan, several others. That's how each book sort of unfolds. So he reads one about ISIS trying to assassinate him and overthrow his kingdom. Okay, a little risky.
You'd think he wouldn't be happy.
If you're Jewish, an evangelical, an American, and an Israeli. Oh, but I didn't tell you, I'm a dual citizen. U.S. and Israeli.
Yes.
So it means I get to vote twice.
Nice.
It's like living in Chicago,
exactly,
which I think you know about.
Yes.
So, but anyway, back to Jordan. So what happened is he reads this book, and rather than the King of Jordan banning me from his kingdom forever, mind you, he invites my wife and me to come for 5 days to meet him, to meet his generals, to find out how he's trying to make sure that my books never come true.
Wow.
We have lunch at the palace. And he says, I was trying to, you know, part of the book, I don't want to give it too much away, but a Jordanian fighter pilot gets recruited by ISIS. He flips, and then he flies his fighter jet into the palace during a peace conference.
Wow.
So he as we sit down for lunch in the same palace that I wrote about, he says, I was trying to think, Joel, where to meet you for the first time. And I thought, well, you wiped out this palace. Why don't you, let me just show you, you know, the damage that you wrought by wiping out this beautiful building. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Then he said, you know, obviously you made me a character, but I can see my staff is fictional. But I can see who corresponds to who in my real life team. So he says, I buy copies of your book and I give them to so-and-so. Wow. And I say, that's you. You don't make it through the terrorist attack.
That is awesome.
So 5 days doing that, you pull a lot of interesting information.
Yes.
About that you can weave into future books. Oh, man, it was a treasure trove.
Yeah, like you'd say, well, I'm going to talk about, oh, no, we do not do that in our country. Here's why, you know, oh, okay. Well, you know, you learn about some things that people would, you know, don't realize are authentic.
Well, I mean, I guess, yes. But in this case, we finish lunch. He says, I'd like to keep talking, but we've got a live fire military exercise going on. It was supposed to be for Vice President Biden last week. But when the Secret Service learned that we were using real missiles and bullets, they said, I don't think so. That's not going to happen. So we rescheduled it for today. Now, we didn't reschedule it for you. But as I woke up this morning, I thought, oh, Joel and Lynn are coming. Maybe they'd like to see this. And I said, well, no, I was hoping for a nap. You know, I was going to go shopping in Amman.
Yes.
I said, no, we'd love to. So I said, great. I'm going to put you in a helicopter. I'm going to fly you out to this base. I'm going to go home and change, and I'll meet you there. Well, what he meant was he was going to put on full military fatigues, fly his own Black Hawk, and meet us there. And then suddenly, I mean, this hillside with a fake town supposedly captured by ISIS starts blowing up. And I'm sitting there next to the king, and the king's like, well, see that flamethrower over there? Technically, that's illegal, but, you know, under the international convention, but we're fighting ISIS, so what the, you know. I was like, you know, your majesty, whatever you want to do. Stuff like that. I didn't grow up doing that stuff.
No.
But that, believe me, has been worked into several novels.
That's awesome. Author Joel Rosenberg, I want to ask you about Russia. Susan Rice, National Security Advisor, saying stand down, knock it off when it comes to trying to stop Russia from interfering with the election or investigating.
Yeah, is this crazy or what? So according to this new book by, which I'm not trying to sell their book,
right,
but by these two Newsweek guy, Michael Isikoff,
yes,
and David
Korn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In their new book, they say that when Russia was aggressively attacking us through cyber technology, trying to subvert and interfere in our 2016 elections,
mm-hmm,
this team in the White House and in the, you know, in the, our intelligence services, we're trying to figure out options to stop them, counter them, and possibly even punish the Russians for doing this. And then, and the national security advisor for President Obama tells them to stand down. We don't want to risk our relationship with Russia. I mean, are you insane? What do you mean to tell a team of people that are trying to protect our democracy? We're not going to do anything. We don't want to. That is infuriating. If that's true, and these are solid journalists, but I mean, that is far worse than anything the president's being accused of right now.
Yeah, and aren't these the same people screaming about Russia, 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 collusion, collusion, collusion for the past year and a half, who now we hear that some of their top people in the party were saying, stand down, back off?
Well, and the Democrats were the ones that cooked up that whole fake dossier.
Oh, my gosh.
With campaign cash. And so, anyway, look, we don't know exactly if the president is guilty of something. I hope not.
Right.
We haven't seen any evidence of that yet. I guess Mueller, if he has something, he'll tell us at some point. But right now, we have an actual threat from Vladimir Putin, the most dangerous dictator on the planet. And there's an old line by Vladimir Lenin, the founder of Marxist-Leninism, the Soviet Union. Lenin said, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's essentially known, the saying goes like this: probe with bayonets. If you find mush, push. If you find steel, stop. Now, he was talking about, you know, in that particular specific case, he was talking about finding landmines. If, you know, probe, and if you hit steel, it means you're hitting a landmine, back off. But essentially, Vladimir Putin, for the last 17 years, especially the last eight,
yes,
has been probing the Obama team and kept finding mush. So they kept pushing.
Right.
They kept taking, you know, southern Ukraine, eastern Ukraine, moving into Syria, slaughtering thousands of people, killing dissidents, disappearing dissidents, you know, arresting journalists. I mean, and there were no consequences. And the question is now, will President Trump show the steel that we need?
And he's not doing it right now.
Well, in some areas he is. I mean, so I'm not talking about the novel at the moment. I'm talking about real life.
Right.
President Trump, to his credit, is massively increasing U.S. defense spending, which was hollowed out under Obama. Yeah. So this is good. President Trump is pushing NATO to spend more on their own defenses, and they are. But the president is radio silent on Putin. He's tougher on Jeff Sessions than he is on Vladimir Putin. That's got
to
change.
That's a wake-up call for us listening to somebody like you, Joel Rosenberg. His book is The Kremlin Conspiracy. It's at bookstores everywhere, online everywhere. And then also check out his website, joelrosenberg.com. When we come back, I have to talk to you about the Islamization of Europe, which I'm very passionate about. And also,
for or against?
For against.
Just checking.
If I had time, I'd hit the rim shot again. And then I have to sneak into the whole never Trumper back in the day that you were versus now. It's really interesting. We'll talk about that next. Joel Rosenberg, author, coming up next. I only have one segment left with Joel C. Rosenberg because the man needs to sleep. I mean, God forbid the man should be able to go home and go to bed. Well, not if you don't even get to go home. You got to go to some hotel or something. But
true.
But Joel Rosenberg is a ball of fun, and he wrote The Kremlin Conspiracy, which is in bookstores and online everywhere. You need to get this.
But this novel is not funny.
Nope, you are. What as my kids would say, yeah, you're funny. Funny looking, right? No, but the novel's not funny. The novel is a thriller. Yeah. It is intense. It is taking what basically the fictitious name Russian president is Putin, basically.
He's Putin-esque, let's say. Yeah.
And it's showing what could happen, as you told me off the air, within a month or two or three, within a year or two or three. It could happen.
Yeah, I write about worst-case scenarios. Here's a dictator rising in Russia. The new American president is fixated on challenges in North Korea and Iran, and this Russian dictator decides he's going to send 100,000 troops to a lightning fast attack to grab one of the NATO small NATO allies on Russia's border, known as the Baltic states: Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. Most Americans can't find it on a map, but they are NATO allies, which means if you attack them, they fall under what's known as Article 5, which is the Mutual Defense Pact. If one NATO country is attacked, everyone considers themselves attacked, and they all come to the rescue of the country. Right. But the gamble that the Russian dictator in this Kremlin conspiracy thriller is, He thinks that if he goes and grabs one, two, or maybe even three of these countries in 96 hours, that the United States and NATO will not actually risk going to war with Russia, much less nuclear war with Russia. And if they don't rescue that country and defend Article 5, that's the end of NATO. In 96 hours, there could be no NATO. Mm. Why? Because no one's going to believe you if you don't keep your promises. And this is a huge risk. Now, I wrote about it as fiction. There's a United States Secret Service agent, Marcus Riker, who is now left the service. And he's in Moscow on private business. And he finds himself at the vortex of all hell breaking loose between the United States and Russia. It's fiction, but I got to tell you, every day that goes by with Vladimir Putin really in power makes me worry the thing could come to pass.
He might end up being a lifetime president, like China. Yeah,
there's an election supposedly on Sunday, you know, but he's going to win because he's killed or driven off, arrested everybody else who could run against him. But now that China has passed this idea that their leader can, you know, be the dictator for life, you got to know Vladimir Putin's thinking, how come I haven't done that yet? I mean, people.
Right.
I suspect that's coming.
Okay, the Islamization of Europe. We only have like 5 minutes, and I got to get that and the Never-Trumper, and help me to get this through. We got to get this through because it's too good. So the Islamization of Europe. I have seen stuff that says that in 20 to 40 years, Germany and France will become Islamic states. They are, I believe that Islam is not compatible with the West. I'm not trying to be mean. I know there's a lot of wonderful, loving, kind, wonderful Muslim people. But I believe that Islam is not compatible with the West. And I do believe that, yes, that Germany and France will become Islamic states. In the end, when that happens, it will become just like any other Islamic state. You do not have the freedoms that you used to have. Thoughts?
Yes. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that's the danger. Western Europe has lost its moral compass. It's a post-Christian, post-Judeo-Christian society. They are struggling at the national levels, at the societal levels, with the concept of absolute right and wrong. And they're pretty much concluding the absolute right and wrong doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they can't figure out what's the principles by which you allow people to come in your country or not. So they basically are being overrun by people who... I think you could, you know, it's sort of like our country. You can make wise decisions. You can let people in. You want people who are smart and hardworking, but you don't want to be overrun. You need to have solid border patrols, and then you decide how many people can come in and then absorb your culture.
Right.
But nobody's absorbing Judeo-Christian culture in Europe. Not the Muslims, because there is no Judeo-Christian culture in Europe anymore.
Yes. So Islam is not compatible with the West. So, you know, when you see our Jewish population
there's a large and rising moderate strain of Islam. You see it in Egypt. You see it in Jordan. You see it in the Emirates. The Saudis are starting to say maybe we need to change. I think the Muslim leaders themselves and societies are pushing back on the radicalism. I'm not sure I can say that it's not compatible with Western thought. In a pluralistic society where you understand everybody's free and you can't have Muslims take over and make everyone go under Sharia law, that's what you're talking about, the inability of Europe to figure out what's okay and what isn't. So in that sense, I agree with you, but I'm not sure it's inevitable.
My thought is, well, the Jewish population is now about to be exceeded in the U.S. by Muslim population, and it concerns me because everywhere I've seen, and you correct me if I'm wrong, when Muslims outnumber the rest of the country, it goes to an Islamic state.
Yeah, I mean, in a country of 320 million people, we're talking about, you know, 3-4 million. I'm not worried about that.
Okay. What are you worried about?
We get our eye off the ball on honoring and respecting moderate Muslims, but going after radicals. I mean, it's two different things, and we have to be careful not to lump people all in one thing, because Muslims, like anybody, like Jews, like Hispanics, who come here to the United States, most of them really want what we all want.
Right.
If we tag them all as crazies, as radicals, we may radicalize them.
Right.
But that shouldn't mean that we can't go arrest and investigate people that are showing radical tendencies.
Now, the coolest thing here, Joel Rosenberg, we got like 2 minutes left, not even 2 minutes, but you were a Never-Trumper.
Till Thursday before the election.
Exactly. Tell me what changed and what your thoughts are now.
Well, look, I looked at his history and I said, I'm uncomfortable. I don't see a conservative. I'm not sure I can believe his promises. But in the end, it really, you know, all right, I and so I was worried. He's unlike any other leader in the history. But in the end, it really was about it's Hillary, who I knew for sure what she'd do, and I was against it, and Trump, who I wasn't sure what he'd do, but it was the only way to stop her. But Mike Pence was also on the ticket, and I'm a friend of Mike Pence. And my wife said to me, "Are you really going to vote against a ticket where one of the members actually likes your books? Is that the plan?" And at that point, I said, all right, with all the things, you know, maybe he'll do good and maybe Pence can help him. So I voted for him.
And now how do you feel? We got 30 seconds.
Well, I'll tell you what I told Anderson Cooper a few months back on CNN. As an evangelical, I wasn't sure this was a marriage that was a good idea, Trump and America. But once the marriage happens, I want it to work. I want to help him. I'm not going to excuse things that I don't agree with.
Right.
But I'm not going to be there's a difference between being a cynic, where you think he can't do anything right, mm-hmm. and being a critic, where you praise him where he's doing well, and you call him on stuff that's not so good. I'm calling him on the Russia stuff, but on a lot of other things, taxes, the economy, jobs, he's doing great. On Israel, he's doing great. On reaching out to the Sunni Arab world, he's doing great. Dealing with North Korea, he's doing great. Russia, not so great. Tweeting, not so great.
Right.
Letting a Secretary of State go in a tweet, not so great. These things bother me, but I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's a summary.
That's perfect. And I'm going to defy gravity by actually getting out on time. I want everybody to know. Truthfully, by the way, is that true, Executive Producer Chris? Am I defying gravity by getting out on time? He's laughing. Yes. Well, he's going to talk to me. He speaks to me in my ear. He says, I'm fine. Yes. Yeah, you say that now, you. All right. Joel Rosenberg, his book is The Kremlin Conspiracy. Get it now. It's at bookstores everywhere. Check out joelrosenberg.com. It has been an awesome privilege to be able to hang with you.
I've enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you, brother.
And in studio is better than anything.
It's better.
But I want to talk to you from Jerusalem. Let's do stuff when I get back home.
Very, very, very much so. That is huge to me, brother. All right. Also, coming up next. See, I'm even going to tease what's coming up next. Isn't that amazing? I'm getting all these brownie points. I hope the boss is listening. Joe Rosenberg approves. Coming up next, the news and federal appeals court says our sanctuary city law can stand for now. I'll tell you why I think that's a great thing next on the Chris Kroc program on WBAP.